Mark chapter 9, the Bible says, He, Jesus, said unto them, Verily I say unto you that there be some of them that stand here which shall not taste of death till they have seen the kingdom of God come with power. There's something they're going to see. Now, and I'm sure as we do, in their minds, they imagined something different than what he was talking about. And you ever think about heaven? You ever imagine and visualize what heaven looks like? And I'm sure that when we get there, our imagination won't touch it. All right, it's going to be so unbelievable. But that's what happens is in our minds, we hear something and we develop this idea of what it's going to be. You know, that happens, you know, in our lives now. And once we get where we imagined we would be, it's different than what we expected. And so the apostles probably had in mind that the kingdom of God, of course, that would be Jesus sitting on the throne in Jerusalem, right? That would be, I could see the armies of the Lord and how everything's beautiful and everything's clean. And when he said that, I'm sure that's what they imagined. But that's not what he was talking about at all. Verse 2, after 6 days, Jesus taketh with him Peter, James, and John, leadeth them up into a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. And his raiment became shining, exceeding white as snow, so as no fuller on earth can white them. So almost, I say translucent, I mean just brilliant, the brilliance of his appearance and his clothing. And there appeared unto them Elias with Moses, and they were talking with Jesus. And we know by reading the other Gospels, they were speaking of his death and resurrection. And so that was the topic. Why, this is just subjective in opinion, why did this happen? Why did Moses and Elijah come see Jesus? Don't have an opinion? Never thought about that before? Deliver a message, okay? I believe that they came to encourage him. And I know that when we think of Jesus, we don't think he needs any encouragement. But if we look forward, we find him in the garden asking the Father to change the plan, right? Now, at the end of his prayer, he said, Nevertheless, not my will, but thy will. But he was 100% God and 100% human. He got tired. He got hungry. He got thirsty. Even on the cross, he said, I'm thirsty. And I believe that the Father sent Elijah and Moses just to encourage Jesus, just to encourage him. How many of us need encouragement? We all do. Man, it's just nice when somebody just loves us, just gives a hug or tells we're doing a good job or shows any kind of appreciation. We need that. And so here's Jesus ready, and I mean, we're getting closer and closer to the day of crucifixion, and Elijah and Moses show up. And they talk about the crucifixion and resurrection. So that, you know, that's, in my mind, that's why they came. In verse 5, Peter answered and said to Jesus, Master, it is good for us to be here. That's a good statement, isn't it? That's a good statement. So far, he hadn't said anything out of the way. It is good for us to be here. Sometimes we just need to learn to appreciate the moment and not say anything. But some people can't do that. They have to be talking. Y'all know anybody? Don't point fingers. You know anybody like that? Just has to be saying something. Has to be talking. Like, just be here. Just enjoy my company. Don't talk to me. Right? You don't have to be saying anything. Now, if you got something to say, say it. Simon Peter was just looking for something to say. And it tells us that. Mark tells us that Peter was talking just to be talking. Because they were afraid and he knew not what to say. Verse 6. It is good for us to be here. You know, and just put yourself there. And Simon Peter looking at Jesus and saying, Master, it is good for us to be here. Nothing wrong. That's great. Man, Peter, good job. That's a good statement. But he didn't stop there, did he? Let us make three tabernacles, or, you know, tents, if you will, shelters. One for thee, one for Moses, one for Elijah. What's wrong with that? Put them equal. And Jews do. Moses is like the top. Man, he was on the mountain with God and brought the Ten Commandments. They do count Moses and Elijah as top. When they have Passover, they leave the door open in case Elijah comes in. And he is the one they're looking to. He is their expectation. He's the one that they're, you know, counting on. They hold Moses and Elijah in high esteem, as we do. But they're not equal with Jesus. And we're not equal with Jesus. I heard a preacher one day say something about my brother Jesus. Yeah. What was he doing? He was putting himself on the same level. And while that might have been some kind of a valid point to make in his sermon, it's not right. Jesus is not your equal, not my equal. We are not equal with Jesus. Neither are Moses or Elijah. Verse 6, for he wist not what to say. He just didn't know what to say. He should have just stood there quietly. Or he could have just said, it is good for us to be here. But he had to break the silence. Man, imagine yourself there. Just stand in awe. Just adore Jesus. Just think about how privileged you are to actually see Moses and Elijah. Like, we're here and Moses and Elijah are here. That's incredible. But nothing has to be said. Just enjoy it. Just appreciate it. Verse 7, Simon Peter's comment triggered something. There was a cloud that overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud saying, this is my beloved son, hear him. You don't need to say anything. You're here to listen. Suddenly, they looked round about. They saw no man anymore save Jesus only with himself. So the three, Peter, James, and John, when the cloud overshadowed them, what do you think they did? Looked up. When that voice came out of heaven, what do you think they did? They looked up. And then when they brought their eyes back down, Moses and Elijah were gone. Verse 9, as they came down from the mountain, he charged them that they should tell no man that what things they had seen till the Son of Man were risen from the dead. And they kept that saying with themselves, questioning one with another what the rising from the dead should mean. What does that mean? Remember when Jesus was crucified, they resisted that. Jesus said, I'll be delivered into the hands of sinners. And Simon said, get behind me, Satan. That was his last chapter. Well, then once Jesus is crucified, they resist the idea, right? Pulling a sword, fighting off the enemy, fleeing when he's arrested, hiding and even lying when they come to the courtyard, when Simon was in the courtyard and in the house. And then he's crucified and they go back to the house, and wouldn't it have been great to have some encouragement for those 3 days? Wouldn't it have been great for Peter, James, and John to console the other eight of the apostles and say, guys, it's okay. He's coming back. He's going to be risen from the dead. He's going to raise up from the dead. But they didn't share that message. Yeah, they knew it here. What's that? But the other eight weren't there, and Jesus told them, don't tell anybody. Right? Until until it happens. Well, now is the opportunity. Jesus on the cross, they didn't say anything. In fact, when they reported that the body was gone, who ran to the tomb? Peter and John, right? And they were shocked. They shouldn't have been shocked. They should have been looking around, calling out, Jesus! But they didn't do that. They were deflated, discouraged. But the key and the point I'm making is they forgot. Because you see the ones fighting off, Peter, the ones that were there at the courtyard, Peter and John, and then running to the tomb that morning, Peter and John, and like, well, what happened? Well, you know what happened. He told you what was going to happen. Moses and Elijah told you what was going to happen, but they didn't. They had forgotten it. Maybe they didn't believe it. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Except for the fact that Jesus raised people from the dead. Like I would say, before Jesus was doing that, you know, we read in the Old Testament about Elijah raising the dead. We see somebody falls on the bones of Elisha and comes back to life. You know, so we see the dead raised in our teachings. But this is different. Like they were walking with Jesus when they came to the village of Nain, and Jesus looked over in the coffin and saw a young man and a mother was crying, and he raised that boy up from the dead. It's different when you see it than when you hear about it. They had witnessed resurrection. And for Jesus now to be talking about resurrection, and then we get to the tomb and he's not there, they should have believed it. They should have remembered it, but they didn't. Absolutely. I mean, we come to church and we, you know, we'd say the same thing over and over again. Why does that preacher preach the same thing over and over again? Because if I don't, we'll forget. I'm not going to do it, but what if I pulled out the sermon from last week and preached it again today? Is that too fresh? Like you'd go, oh, he preached that last week. Right? That's the point. And there was a preacher, you know, this is just a story, but the preacher went to a new church and he preached that sermon Sunday morning, and he preached that sermon Sunday night and Wednesday night and Sunday morning and Sunday night and Wednesday, and the deacon finally came to him and said, preacher, you just going to keep preaching the same sermon? He said, till y'all start doing it, I'm going to keep preaching the same sermon. When you start applying it, I'll move on. But is there really a point to move on from this sermon till you start applying this one? Good point. So they should have remembered it. They should have been encouraged themselves. They should have been of, you know, and to Brother Ronnie's point, well, they kept their word. They didn't say anything until he was resurrected. But I know that you're like I am. When you have the answer, you have the solution, but you're not supposed to tell, you just look at you and go, look, trust me, it's going to be okay. You know, well, how do you know? I can't tell you, but it's going to be okay. Right? That can encourage people. But there are, I mean, here they are. They forgot it. They didn't. They either didn't believe it, or they forgot it, or they thought it meant something else. They didn't understand. Verse 11, they asked him, saying, why say the scribes Elijah must first come? He answered and told them, Elias verily cometh first and restoreth all things, and how it is written of the Son of Man, he must suffer many things and be set at naught. But I say unto you, Elijah is indeed come. And they have done to him whatsoever they listed, as it is written of him. And to understand the point is that John the Baptist came in the spirit of Elijah. It was not to say that they had the same soul, but to say that he was doing the same thing. He was the messenger. He was the harbinger. He was the one that came ahead to say, hey, he's coming. And to set things in order, make his path straight. That was John the Baptist, but he was not named Elijah. He was not the same man Elijah, but he was the one. He was the one that was sent ahead. Verse 14, when he came to his disciples, he saw a great multitude about them. And the scribes questioning with them. And straightway all the people, when they beheld Jesus, were greatly amazed, running to him, saluted him. So, they saw him and they're so excited to see him, they just take off. Here they are standing with these scribes. There's a video I saw. I've seen it before. It was a news clip, but I saw it again this week of a president who was at a press conference of some sort, giving some kind of speech, and there was a former president over to the right. Y'all know the video I'm talking about? And that president looked up like, where'd everybody go? They were all swooning over the former president, all gathered around him. Y'all see that video? Well, here are the scribes, and there's a crowd of people around, and everybody's there listening, and then Jesus walks up, and where did all the people go? How does that make the scribes feel? How does that make these religious leaders? Oh, they're jealous. All the people. In fact, if you remember the verse, it said, all the world has gone after him. It's just one of them saying, you know, the whole world's following Jesus. But their sense was they were losing what influence they had. They were losing what popularity they had. So they were jealous. They ran over to Jesus. Verse 16, and he asked the scribes, what question you with them? I see Jesus walking up to the scribes. Remember, these are disciples and the other people in the community. And Jesus says, what's going on here? One of the multitude answered, verse 17, Master, I've brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. Wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him. He foameth, gnasheth with teeth, pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out. They could not. He answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. What does that mean? Jesus is saying, guys, at some point, the ministry's got to go beyond Jesus' ability. The church has to take on the role of loving people and helping people and changing lives. We've got to have a part in that. It's one thing for us to say, well, you know, I'll pray for you. But we've got to do what we can materially and physically and, you know, personally, instead of just saying, well, I'll pray for you. They brought him, verse 20, they brought the boy unto him. When he saw him, straightway the spirit tear him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming. Now, understand something. This is not a regular medical condition we're talking about. This boy had a demon possession. He asked his father how long ago since this came unto him, and he said, of a child. So he's had a long time since he was a kid, and oft times it cast him to the fire and the water to destroy him. If thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us, the dad says. Jesus said unto him, verse 23, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. How about that? So there's this, if you just have faith, if you won't stand in the way of it. Jesus saw the people, came running. Oh, verse 24, the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. Because no doubt, as much as we agree with the Bible and believe the Bible and trust God, there are things that we just have a hard time accepting. I don't mean what's written in the Bible. I mean, there are people around us that we say, well, I know God can help anybody. I know God can turn anybody around. I just don't believe they're going to turn around, right? But with God, all things are possible, and all things are possible with them that believe. So we've got to believe, and we've got to pray, and we've got to trust God. But he said, help my unbelief. If something sneaks in and tries to talk me out of it, help me not to believe that. Jesus saw the people came running together. He rebuked the foul spirit, saying, thou dumb, deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him. Enter no more into him. And the spirit cried, rent him sore, and came out of him. And he was as one dead, insomuch that many said, he is dead. I mean, here's this young man that's been, you know, cast around. And just think about this. If you had a demon possession, and you could take that in many different directions, but if you had a demon living in you, and all of a sudden that demon was gone, boy, what a relief. You ever just drive down the road and breathe and say, wow, it feels so good just to be able to breathe. You know, after you've been sick for a while or had allergies and all that kind of stuff, and you're used to having to blow your nose all the time and breathe through your mouth, and then you just one day you just breathe, take a deep breath through your nostrils, and you go, wow, that's wonderful. Just to be able to breathe. And I imagine that young man's been living with this devil living in him. He's been challenged and fighting and just exhausted with this demon. And it's gone, and he's just laying there. And I bet he was just thinking, oh, this is wonderful. Just not have a demon living in me anymore. This is great to just have control over my own mind and body again. Just laying there. Everybody looks at him, oh, he's dead. He's dead. Verse 27, Jesus took him by the hand, lifted him up, and he arose. When he was coming to the house, his disciples asked him privately, why could not we cast him out? Now, let's look at this. Jesus sent the 74th, and he said, you know, cast out devils, right? Wasn't that part of his instruction? So they had the authority of heaven to cast a devil out of somebody. In fact, when they came back and reported to Jesus after their first mission, they said, even the devils flee. And Jesus said, rejoice not that you cast out devils and heal the sick. He said, rejoice that your name's written in heaven. He said, you praise God that you're saved. It's wonderful to have the ability to do all those things, guys, but most important is your salvation. So they asked Jesus, why can we not cast this one out? This one was different. They had cast devils out, but this one wouldn't go. And they say to Jesus, why wouldn't this one go? Why couldn't we cast this one out? And he said, this kind can come forth by nothing but prayer and fasting. Well, go back up a couple of verses and show me in there when that man came to Jesus and said, my son has a devil, can you cast him out? Show me the verse where it says, and Jesus paused and fasted and prayed. It didn't say that. Why? Because he's not talking about fasting and praying in the moment. He's saying fasting and prayer in preparation. We have to be ready for what's coming. We don't know what's coming. We have to prepare for whatever's coming. We got to have our lamps trimmed and our oil full, right? Got to be ready. Is Jesus coming today? Don't know. Right? Don't know. Could be. We're all talking about it, wondering about it. Look, I spent all week trying to find in the prophecy where it says, you know, when Gaza attacks, Jesus is coming. It doesn't say that. I mean, there are references to Gaza and Ashkelon, all those areas right there on the coast. But it doesn't say of a certain, when you see this, this is the sign he's coming. No. But he could come today. Are we ready? Or we could go to him today. Are we ready? I got to be ready. I don't know what tomorrow brings. I don't know what today brings. I don't know what information is going to be dropped in my lap today. And we get bad news from time to time, don't we? We face heartbreaking, critical situations. So we need to be prayed up, and we need to have a good relationship with the Father now, because in the moment, we won't have time to get ready. You got to fast and pray in advance. Verse 30, they departed thence and passed through Galilee. And he would not that any man should know it, for he taught his disciples and said, the Son of Man is delivered into the hands of men. They shall kill him after the third day. And after that he is killed, he shall rise the third day. And they understood not that saying and were afraid to ask him. So everybody heard it, but they didn't understand it. And they were afraid to ask because they didn't want to look dumb. What was the children's book of the magic clothes, right? What's that? I can't remember the name of it, but the king, you know, and the emperor's new clothes, new coat. And say, well, it's going to be marvelous, but this is how you'll be able to tell who the wise people are among you. Fools can't see it. But the wise people will be able to see your clothes. And so they spend all their time pretending, oh, yeah. And then they bring it to him, and he won't admit he can't see it because he doesn't want to be a fool. And so he puts on his imaginary coat and walks through town. And everybody, oh, it's beautiful, because they don't want everybody to know they're fools too. Right? Right? Yeah. And so you go, oh, yeah, I see it. No, you didn't see it. But here are these disciples just going along with it, and they don't want to ask the question. They don't want to say, maybe I don't get it. Maybe I don't understand. And so they just go along. If they had asked after he was crucified, they would know, hey, look, he's going to be back. But they didn't. They wouldn't investigate it. They wouldn't ask the question. Guys, don't sit in church and just agree with what the pastor says. Ask questions. And even if you don't want to ask it out loud, write it down and ask later. But don't just go along with it. I had somebody call me Friday and say, or no, it was yesterday, and say, hey, I want to know when this changed in churches. And I say, well, what do you mean? I won't tell you what he's talking about, but he said, well, you know, I was brought up to believe this. And I said, yeah, so was I, but that's a preference. That's tradition. You won't find any biblical basis for it. Oh, well, what about this verse? I said, yeah, I mean, that verse is there, but it's not saying what they say it says. Now, we have preferences and we have traditions, but it's not in the Bible. Exactly. Sure. Right. And so text or call or email or whatever, you know, airmail, pigeons, whatever, don't care. Just get your question answered. Right? There's no reason for us just to continue participating in something that might be wrong. Right? Well, that's what my church believes. Well, where is it in the Bible? Because that's how churches are supposed to establish their beliefs. Right? Till it's out. And once it's out, you can't catch it. But the apostles didn't ask because they were embarrassed to ask. But guys, if you don't want to ask it out loud, write it down. Sometimes somebody will meet me right up here, right after Sunday school, and say, well, I got a question about it. That's okay. Ask the question. What we don't want to do is just agree with the church because the church said so. You know what that's cost the world in the last 2,000 years? Those they were burning Christians at the stake, throwing them in the water, seeing if they float. Right? Tragedy. Because somebody had an idea. It wasn't based in the Bible. They understood not, and they were afraid to ask. And he came to Capernaum, and being in the house, he asked them, "What was it that you disputed among yourselves by the way?" I mean, as he was walking to Capernaum, he could hear them just back there, you know, trying to be discreet, but they were fussing. But they held their peace. But by the way, they had disputed among themselves who should be the greatest. He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "If any man desire to be first, the same shall be last of all and servant of all." He took a child, set him in the midst of them. And when he had taken him in his arms, he said to them, "Whosoever shall receive one of such children in my name receiveth me. Whosoever shall receive me receiveth not me, but him that sent me." John answered him, saying, "Master, we saw one casting out devils in thy name." Well, hold on just a second. Didn't we just read where they couldn't do that? And here somebody's actually doing it. "And he follows not us. We forbade him because he followeth not us," because he's not in our church. You know, sometimes we have a hint of jealousy because of that church over there is doing that. Okay, let them do it. Somebody was talking the other day about a food drive, you know, where people come by and get the food. And say, "Well, there's already a bunch of people doing that." Well, just because other people are doing good doesn't mean we can't do good too. Right? So if that's something that you're burdened with, don't just dismiss it because somebody else is doing it. And don't get mad at other people for doing it because they're not part of your group. You know, I'll go ahead and attack this. We are, as a church, we associate in a mission sense with the American Baptist Association. They don't have any authority over us. We don't send, you know, money to a headquarters somewhere, none of that. But those churches, American Baptist Association churches, not American Baptist Convention, there are different groups, we're part of that association. There are people who believe that we ought to have a ABA church in every city. I did a mission survey with a couple of guys. They wanted to plant a church in Gainesville. And I said, "Well, let's go down there and look at where you want to go." So we went to the neighborhood and I said, "Well, there's a church." "Well, yeah, but it's not an ABA church." I don't care. Doctrinally, they're the same as we are. They teach the same thing. I mean, if you want to come down here and minister in this community, join that church and be a minister of that. But to start a whole new project, you know, again, buying land and building a building, I'm not opposed to that. But if there's already ministry there and already a church doing the stuff that you say you're going to do, why start over? You know, they're already there. I mean, it wouldn't be right for us to start a Baptist church across the street from this one, would it? Why would we do that? Just so we could have an ABA church there? And I talked to missionaries around the world, same idea. Well, we don't have a single ABA church in this country. But I can go online and find you a whole bunch of independent Baptist churches with the exact same doctrine, using the exact same Bible, reaching those communities. But they're not ABA. American Baptist Association. They're not one of us. Are they doing what we do? That's what's happened. I mean, if there's anything that we learn in that, that's it right there. Jesus said, "Forbid him not," verse 39, "no man which shall do a miracle in my name that can lightly speak evil of me. For he that is not against us is on our part. Whosoever shall give you a cup of water to drink in my name, because you belong to Christ, verily I say unto you, he shall not lose his reward." If that's the reason they're doing it, it's because you belong to me. Jesus said, "I'm going to bless them like they were blessing me." Don't forbid them just because they're not in your club. And then he goes on in verse 42 through 50. Whosoever shall offend one of these little ones that believe in me, it is better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were cast into the sea. How does Jesus feel about that? Jesus said, if you hurt a child, you should just be completely eliminated. But he goes on, so that's verse 42, he said just they should be drowned. Verse 42, whosoever shall offend one of these little ones that believes in me, it is better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and he were cast to the sea. And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands go to hell, into the fire that shall never be quenched. Now, I got to be honest with you, this is a verse or a scripture that a lot of people have trouble with. But here's the point Jesus is making. Number one, he says, you're better off just not even being here than to hurt a child. But in each one of these following verses, what he's saying is, if something keeps you from getting saved, cut it off. Well, you know, I would get saved except, well, then you need to eliminate that. Guys, there's nothing in this world worth going to hell for. So if you're contemplating going, you know, getting saved, but you say, well, I'd get saved, but I'd have to give up this sin, and whatever part of you that loves that sin, cut it off. Because it'd be better for you to get saved than to go to hell enjoying your sin. That's the point. So eliminate it. Well, I'd go to heaven, I'd get saved, but then I'd lose my friends. And you need to lose those friends now. Cut it off. Be done with it. But don't let anything keep you out of heaven. And that's the point that he's making there. I also want to note this in verse number 43, continuing, he says, into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched. That's the eternal fire. And then he says, where their worm dieth not. What is the worm? Disease. Let me tell you something, and I know this is sensitive, so I'll try to be compassionate about it. But we sit around and we know somebody's not saved. They die of some disease, and what do we say? Oh, they're better off. They're not suffering anymore. Jesus said the fire's not quenched and the disease is still there. Can you imagine not being saved and struggling? I know this is one that our people are familiar with, struggling to breathe and how hard that is. You just feel like you can't breathe. Can you imagine for eternity feeling like you can't get enough air? That's what Jesus is saying. That disease doesn't go away for eternity. So yes, hell is a terrible place that we don't want to go. We don't want our friends or family or anybody to go there. Let's take a break.